Hey, what's up, everybody? I hope you had a great weekend. Man, it has been an exciting 48 hours to be a boxing fan. Two undisputed championship fights featuring two of the biggest superstars in the sport of boxing within less than 48 hours. Hell, within less than 36 hours, right? It's basically a day and a half because of the time difference between these two fights. So let's talk about it. Inoue knocks out Neri in Tokyo, and then Saturday night, Canelo wins a unanimous decision over Jaime Munguia in Las Vegas. Let's start with the fight in Tokyo, and let's give some thoughts. So for those of you, all you guys have seen it already, so hopefully I won't be playing spoiler, but Inoue was dropped in the first round, and in fact, it was the first round that Inoue has been outlanded by an opponent in 40-something straight rounds. I can't remember the exact number. It might be 44 or 45 rounds that he landed, straight rounds, that he landed more punches than his opponent until the first round of this fight. So Neri had a great start, about as good as you could hope to start for him. And for Inoue, it was during a... it wasn't an exchange. They were kind of inside. And Inoue threw a punch that partially landed, but Neri mostly caught it and then countered. And that was it. It was just a catch and counter, real short punch that dropped Inoue. And he was he wasn't hurt, but he was definitely a little nervous for a minute. You could see the anxiety. For the rest of that first round, he was very, very cautious. Then Inoue comes out in the second round and he drops Neri. And from that point on, he proceeded to just beat up Luis Neri, who it was the naturally larger man and, of course, had a history in Japan, beat Yamanaka twice under very suspicious circumstances. Look, I'm just going to put it out there. I don't care who it pisses off. Luis Neri has a history of being a dirty fighter. At one point in this fight, when he was getting desperate, he tried to use his head, and he headbutted in a way purposely. It wasn't an accident. He meant to do it. He's a dirty fighter. So it was satisfying to see anytime a dirty fighter gets their comeuppance, it's satisfying. But to see Inoue get up off the canvas, dust himself off, collect himself, imagine the pressure. You're in Tokyo Dome, 55,000 people. Naoya Inoue, I think a lot of Western boxing fans don't understand how big of a star he is. And a lot of you forget Tokyo is the biggest market in the world. It's the biggest metropolitan area, biggest market on earth. And Inoue is the biggest sports star in that market. So when you're the biggest star in the biggest market and you're fighting at the historic Tokyo Dome, and if you know your boxing history, it was, I don't know, 30, 40 years ago. I don't remember off the top of my head. I'm not going to do math right now. Probably 40 years ago or something that, or maybe 30 years ago, whatever, that Buster Douglas upset Mike Tyson in that arena, right? So there's history of major upsets in that building. So in the first round, Inoue is put down by a strong guy, an explosive puncher, who you don't know what he's got in his system, you know, has a history of upsetting fighters in Japan. You're in the Tokyo Dome. You know, all that stuff starts to play in your mind. 99% of human beings in that moment would have panicked at least a little bit. Inoue looked very, very cool, collected himself for the rest of that first round, took a breather, dusted himself off, came out in the second, and took care of business from there. So pound for pound, that's always the debate, right, with Inoue when he fights. Right now, in this moment, it's between Naoya Inoue and Terrence Crawford. I think they have separated themselves as the two best fighters in the world. And I'm not just talking about boxing. I'm talking about all martial arts. I think they're the two best fighters in the world right now in all martial arts. The difference between the two, because it's the debate, is it Inoue, is it Crawford? Is it Crawford, is it Inoue? Well, here's what I'll add, okay? It really depends on what you prefer. Inoue has been a lot more active, right? He's fought twice already now since Crawford beat Spence. Crawford hasn't fought. And by the time he fights Madrimov in August, which is a quality fight, it will be over a year that he's been out of the ring. So Crawford has been chronically inactive. He fights once a year. And Inoue has been much more active. Also, I think Inoue overall has faced the better opposition. I know a lot of American fans would disagree with that because they just don't know the lower weight divisions and they don't know fighters from other parts of the world. But if you look at top to bottom in all the weight classes he has fought in, I think you can make a very valid argument that Naoya Inoue has faced the overall better opposition. He's also moved up more in weight and winning Undisputed twice within a calendar year, which he did at 118 and 122. Within a year, he was undisputed in both of those divisions. That's something Crawford hasn't done. So I'm more impressed overall by Inoue's resume compared to Crawford. But here's the sticking point. Inoue has developed some very bad fundamental habits. There's a little bit of Roy Jones Jr. in him, okay? Stay with me for a minute. I'm not comparing them style-wise, but stay with me. Roy Jones was so dominant, so superior athletically to all the guys he was fighting that he could get away with dropping his hands, sticking his chin out there, lunging forward, keeping his head on line. He could do all that stuff because he was nimble enough, athletic enough, explosive enough, and just so dominant over his opposition that it didn't cost him until it did, right? It caught up with him and it cost him later in his career because he was not able to reverse all of those bad habits at that point. They were ingrained in him and it's like the tracks were set. The grooves in the record were there and it was never going to change. So Inoue, like Jones, has been so much more dominant, so much more athletic than all the opponents he has fought. And by the way, compared to Crawford, I think Inoue is the more athletic guy too. Just if comparing the two of them, I think Inoue is definitely the more athletic guy compared to Crawford, Usyk, Canelo, all the other top guys. But he's been so dominant, so explosive. He's been able to get away with certain things. When he shoots with the left hand, the right hand drops. When he shoots with the right hand, the left hand drops. He also will stand in front of you with his head on the line. It's one thing if you're going to drop your hands. If you're going to drop your hands, though, after throwing a combo, you need to get your head on your opponent's shoulder. You need to get off the line. You need to get underneath. You know, if you duck down to your right, if you move over to your left, you need to get your head on your opponent's shoulder. You need to get out of harm's way. And what he will do and what you watch what happened in the first round. He'll kind of stand in front of you and exchange with you, throw a shot, and his head will be right there with his hands down. He's been good enough, sharp enough, quick enough, nimble enough, all that to avoid, except I do have to mention Nonito Donaire. Donaire caught him with a good shot that busted his face, literally broke his face, right? This isn't the first time he's been caught. This time it just cost him because he got dropped. I actually think it cost him more against Donaire because he literally had to get reconstructive surgery to his face. Okay, I think that cost him more. A flash knockdown's not a big deal. A lot of you guys out there make way too much out of knockdowns and losses. You go so crazy over the top with that. This was just a flash knockdown. However, it shows a vulnerability in a way that he has, and it's going to cost him as he fights bigger guys. It didn't cost him at 118, 112, but Luis Neri was the bigger guy in the ring tonight. He was the naturally larger, stronger guy, and you can see that right away. And that's why that in that moment, it cost Inoue. Getting caught with that short little counter punch, boom, he's on his butt. If he moves up to 126, there's some big boys in that division, okay? He's going to be even more undersized. He'll be the superior athlete. He'll be faster, probably be even more explosive. But against those naturally larger guys, you got to clean up some of that mess, okay? So as it relates back to the pound-for-pound debate, Crawford does not make those mistakes. Terrence Crawford's fundamentals are, I'm not going to say flawless because he's been dropped too. Let's not forget, Igadijus Kavalijauskas, the mean machine, dropped him, right? He's been popped and he's been dropped. I even think he was hurt against Gamboa going way, way back to when he was at lightweight. I think it was Gamboa that buzzed him. But so he's not, you know, there's no such thing as a flawless fighter. Okay. But the fundamentals that we saw with Crawford against Spence, when he's on his A game, when he's stepping up to that level of opposition, he tightens it up. I think he got a little careless against Kavalauskas. Honestly, I think in a way was a little careless against Neri early on, and felt he was very tense and anxious. There was a lot of weight on his shoulders, and all of that played out with that knockdown. But if you rate Terrence Crawford pound for pound number one because his fundamentals are more disciplined, I'm not going to disagree with you on that. If you rate Inoue number one pound for pound over Crawford because he has the superior resume, has had the more impressive body of work, I'm not going to disagree with that. Basically, what I'm saying, guys, is flip a coin between the two of them. And I have to mention his name as well. Alexander Usyk is sitting at number three, pound for pound. I mention him because he fights in a couple weeks. Usyk, on paper, should be dominated and stopped in the middle rounds by Tyson Fury. On paper, that's what should happen, okay? Just based on their size and their history in the division, that's what we should see play out. If Alexander Usyk is remotely competitive with Fury, it's going to be a bad look for the Gypsy King. But if Usyk can win that fight, it goes to a decision, he outboxes Fury and beats him, he's the top guy. There's just no denying it at that point. But that's a couple weeks away. Until then, it's between Inoue Crawford. Flip a coin. Flip a coin. As far as Inoue, what's next? Look, you look at 122 pounds. He's already really beat the top dude. Let's pull up the ratings here. Let's pull up the ring ratings and see who we have in this division, because he's pretty much already beat. Yeah, I mean, I could share my screen here in a second. I wanted to show you guys real quick. Let me share this, and then we'll go to ratings. Just real quick, CompuBox punch numbers, because I know that's everyone's favorite. I just wanted to show in that first round, okay? Neri more than doubled Inoue's output and basically doubled the connected punches. But then you see a complete reversal from rounds two through six, right? Where Inoue just really started to dominate and take over once he tightened things up. But I thought this was worth noting because it shows that Inoue is human. He's vulnerable. He's human. Not only did he get dropped in that first round, he was, in terms of punch numbers, he was decisively beat in that round. Okay. So it's possible to beat Inoue. And that's what I wanted to get to. So I won't read into all this. You see here the total punches. Inoue basically doubled up Neri, doubled up the number of power punches, doubled up the number of jabs, landed more to the body. He thoroughly dominated this fight once he got going. Let me share my screen here because I want to show these ratings. Let's look at the other top guys in the division. And can you guys see this? Okay, cool. So look, we're looking at Inoue. He's the champ, right? He's already beat Fulton. That's number one. He's already beat Topalis, number two. Now he's beat Neri, who's sitting at number five currently. Who's left? I mean, he's got all the belts. Is there any one of these guys that are going to make for a super duper big fight? You know, I think there is a real angle with Neri because of his history there in Japan. But with all these other guys, who is there? So that means he's going to be moving up to featherweight at some point. Now let's pull up the featherweight ratings. Here we go. Right now, featherweight, the championship is vacant. This division is wide open. Wide open. Luis Lopez has a belt. Lay Wood, Ray Vargas has a belt. Rafael Espinoza, Raymond Ford. None of these guys are really big stars, right? It's going to be hard to find fighters that are going to make for it. I'm not just talking about like exciting fights matchup wise that you can get just, you know, matchmaking, but just big commercial fights. So this leads me to another point. Let me stick with the first one. Naoya Inoue at some point is going to move up too much. He's going to move up too high in weight, and it's going to cost him at some point. Okay. Is the ceiling 126? Is it 130? I think it's somewhere in there. I'm looking at this current featherweight division. There's some big guys here. I mean, Ray Vargas would look like a giant next to Inoue. So there's some big boys, but are any of them on Inoue's level anywhere near that? Are any of these guys as good as Luis Neri and Stephen Fulton? I don't know about that. I really don't. So I think that he could definitely compete in this 126 division and maybe clean it out as well. But then maybe 126, there might be somebody there at some point, definitely at 130. I think there's just going to be a little too much for Inoue. You saw today for the first time at 122 that he was a little undersized against, you know, he was in there against a bigger, stronger guy. And that's only going to continue if he continues to move up in weight. So there's that one point. Second point, fighting in Japan. There are a lot of the Inoue deniers and Inoue haters. I would just call them bigoted assholes and ignorant assholes. That's what I'd call them. But the Inoue haters always talk about, well, this guy needs to come fight in America if he wants to really be a star. Really? Name me an American fighter at 122 to 126 that is worth it for Inoue to come over here and fight, where he's going to do bigger numbers than he can do over in Japan. Once again, I reiterate, for those of you just getting on to the show, Inoue is the biggest athlete, the biggest star, the biggest athletic star in Tokyo. Tokyo is the biggest market on earth. When you're the top dog in the top town, you ain't got to go nowhere. I don't want to hear that. I just showed you guys the fighters. I'll pull it up again, man. This is 126. Which one of these guys is going to pull Inoue to America? Brandon Figueroa? Really? Raymond Ford? Those guys? Is Nick Ball going to pull him to the UK? I mean, where's it going to go? Right now, all these guys are going to have to stamp their passport and go to Tokyo. And if you're Inoue, why would you leave? And by the way, he's fought in America before. I've watched him fight in America. I've been ringside to see him fight in America before. So he has traveled, okay? But at this point, he's the top dog. And he might be the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. He's absolutely a top-five brand commercially with what he brings in terms of viewership, sponsorship, all of it, ticket sales, ratings, TV ratings. Over in Japan, Japan alone is massive. He does bigger numbers in Japan than any American fighter does in America. Okay. And the selling out a stadium, Tokyo Dome, 55,000, right? And here's another important part to remember about this. He sells out the Tokyo Dome against a guy that did have some history there in Japan, but wasn't necessarily a star. All 55,000 of those tickets sold were to see Inoue, not to see Neri. So there are other guys out there that can do a good crowd, but they have to have the right opponent, right? Fury can do a crowd if he's fighting Wilder. Outside of that, Fury don't sell shit, right? Errol Spence has done crowds when he's fought guys like Mikey Garcia and stuff, but then there's other times where he's fought dudes where he hasn't sold very well, right? Doesn't sell a lot of pay-per-views. So there are plenty of guys I could point to like that. There are only a handful of fighters who really could like pack a stadium like that. You're talking Canelo Alvarez, you're talking Naoya Inoue. Now, we've seen this in recent years from bigger fighters. I mentioned Alvarez, but I'm thinking heavyweights, the Klitschkos, particularly Vladimir Klitschko. He did massive numbers over in Germany and other parts of Europe. He'd fill up massive soccer stadiums over there, right? Anthony Joshua has done massive crowds. His fight against Vladimir Klitschko, for example, massive crowd at O2. I think it was almost 100,000 people. The city had to literally keep the trains running longer and have more trains to accommodate all the people who came into town that day in London. So, we've seen that with heavyweights, but to see a 122-pound fighter doing that, it's not only unprecedented, at least in the modern era, it's really impressive. It's really impressive. And so I'll say this before I move on to the other fight about Inoue. Inoue, more than any other fighter in boxing right now, is the guy I have to see. I want to see Terrence Crawford fight. I want to see Alexander Usyk fight. I want to see those guys fight, but I want to see him fight top guys. I'll watch Inoue fight a mandatory. There's just 20 to 1 odds, 100 to 1 odds. I'll watch it. I'll got to see this guy fight live. If that means I got to get up early in the morning to see him, which I did this morning, or stay up late at night or whatever it is, I'm going to do it. He's the one fighter right now for me in boxing that I have to see fight no matter who it is, because what he is doing is so dynamic, so different, so special. I got to see it. And I feel like I'm missing out if I turn away from the TV screen for 1 second. Okay. The last guy I felt this way about was Gennady Golovkin during his great run in the 2010s, leading up to the two fights with Canelo Alvarez. That ride was so much fun, and I wanted to be part of every second of it. Last guy I felt about before that was probably Manny Pacquiao. And then you're talking Arturo Gatti. Like there's certain names, right? Where there's a fighter. Sometimes there's, if you're lucky, if you're in a good enough era, there's two or three guys like that. But generally speaking, there's one guy where it's like, man, I got to see this dude fight. And I want to watch footage of him training. I want to see the interviews. I'll watch the preview shows. I'll watch all that kind of stuff. Most of these fights now, I don't watch the press conferences anymore. I don't watch the weigh-ins. I don't need to. It doesn't interest me. I've seen thousands of them. I've been to hundreds of them myself. But in a way, if it involves him, I'm watching it. He's the one guy right now. So for me, he moves the needle like that. And it's going to be interesting to see what he could do from here on out. If he ends up moving up to featherweight and becoming undisputed there, holy hell. It's not a strong division right now, but he would be so undersized. It would be just incredibly impressive. Okay, let's move on to real quick. I just want to talk about, I can't stay on much longer, maybe 10, 15 more minutes. I wanted to talk about Las Vegas. Canelo Alvarez scores a unanimous decision over Jaime Munguia. The fight pretty much went as we expected, right? I told you guys, I thought this was a distance fight. Canelo had a chance of maybe stopping him late, but I felt very, very strongly this was going to go the distance. Go back and look at the video if you don't believe me. I put that out there on record. And that's what happened. He dropped Munguia in what, the third, fourth round. It was kind of a flash knockdown. What not at all surprising. I think I mentioned at some point during one of my previews that, you know, he could floor Munguia at some point. But at this point in his career, Canelo's not going to stop guys like this. He's just not going to. And if you look at the trajectory of where those two fighters are at in their careers, Munguia is moving up. He's a vastly improved fighter from where he was just a few years ago. And Canelo's trending down. He's slowing down a little bit. He's, in my opinion, past his best. He's lost half a step. I don't know if he's lost a full step yet, but he's lost half a step. Okay. So he's kind of, you know, trending down. The other guy's trending up. So given all that, and given the fact that Munguia is the naturally larger guy, and he's a physical type of fighter, can take a decent shot, doesn't have an iron chin, but has a sturdy enough chin, and has a good, strong will, this didn't surprise me at all, this result. Also, I said multiple times, again, go back, check the video. Some of you guys out there thought Canelo was going to flatten this dude in three rounds. You said Jaime Munguia was trash. And I told you all, this fight's going to be more competitive than a lot of you think. Boom. That's exactly what played out. Now, I thought Canelo easily won 8 or 9 rounds, but it was still competitive. And Munguia did have his moments. So once again, I think my intuition going into this fight was proven correct that Munguia, not only is he an improved fighter, but he can hang with the top guys at 168. So let's talk about that. I want to see Munguia fight Caleb Plant. I want to see him fight Demetrius Andre, Jermall Charlo, should he continue to fight on. Who knows if the Charlos will ever fight again, but his last fight was at super middleweight. So I'd like to see that fight. I would like to see him against Callum Smith. I think Callum Smith moves up to 75, but I'd like to see him against all the top guys at 168. Dave Morrell. I want to see those fights. If David Benavidez decides to move back down to super middleweight and he can make the weight, I want to see Munguia versus Benavidez. I want to see those fights because win, lose, or draw, I think Munguia is going to be a tough out for all those guys. Not only that, but here's the part that I tweeted this out and it caused a little stir among certain people. But I said, I personally believe Munguia is the A-side in all those matchups. He's the commercial A-side. And people are like, no way. Some people got butt hurt over that. And they're like, you know, so-and-so is a bigger star. So really? David Benavidez. If David Benavidez and Jaime Munguia were to fight later this year, I'm talking globally. Who's the bigger brand? You really think it's Benavidez? A guy who can't sell? Has he done a big crowd in his own hometown? Outside of his hometown, has he ever done a crowd? Has he ever sold more than 50,000 paper? I think he's fought on two pay-per-views. They maybe sold 50,000, if that. He's a bigger star than Munguia. Do you know the numbers Munguia pulls in Mexico? Do you understand the sponsorships and the money, the whales he brings in from Mexico when he fights? I think a lot of you underestimate that. I love America. I'm a proud American, but American sports fans are the most ethnocentric assholes on earth, a lot of them. And they forget that there's this place outside America called Earth, and there's other countries on Earth, hundreds of them. And outside of America, I don't know, guys. I think Munguia might be a bigger brand than Benavidez, Plant, definitely Charlo and Andre, guys like that. Maybe even in America against guys like Charlo, Andre. Those guys don't sell a lot, okay? And now Munguia has fought against the top dog, Canelo, the biggest commercial star in the sport, and went the distance, had some moments, got up off the canvas and showed some toughness and grit, went the distance. He'll learn from this experience because it's the first time he's fought anybody on the elite level. And I definitely think he'll continue to improve. Now, do I ever think Jaime Munguia is going to be an elite-level operator? No, he's incredibly flawed. Okay. I could list a series of flaws with him as a fighter. But given the state of the super middleweight division, I don't think it's a very talent deep division. There's some quality world class operators, but elite level guys, I don't know about that outside of Canelo. Given all that, I think that he poses a really strong challenge to any of those guys. And I think that commercially, he's going to bring the heat. For the most part. So he's going to get to dictate terms, even though he just suffered a loss. Okay. Canelo Alvarez. Everyone wants to see him fight David Benavidez. I posted a poll on my Twitter. Who do you want to see Canelo fight next? Benavidez or Crawford? If you had to choose between those two fights, who do you want to see next? And the vast majority, it was like over 2/3 of you picked Benavidez. A lot of you really want to see that fight. I understand. I get it. I want to see it too. Probably won't happen. I'm not going to rule it out. But if you're Canelo Alvarez, who, again, clearly has lost half a step, you're the biggest star in the sport, you can fight whoever the hell you want. It doesn't matter, right? And the sanctioning organizations are going to work with Canelo. They're not going to prop up a guy like Benavidez and force him to fight him. In fact, WBC already, they set things up for Benavidez at 175 to protect Canelo. Because they're all in business with Canelo. So we're not going to see a situation where Canelo is going to be treated the way Terrence Crawford was or Josh Taylor was or other fighters, okay, who are undisputed, where the sanctioning organizations were real quick to get in their ass, particularly Taylor. That's not going to happen here. They're going to give him soft mandatories. You know, don't be surprised if Edgar Berlanga somehow becomes a mandatory at some point. And they can fight him, and it's Mexico versus Puerto Rico, right? That will be the marketing angle, and it's my mandatory. I got to fight him. There's your marketing angle. And the Mexico versus Puerto Rico thing, first of all, that hasn't been a rivalry for decades, literally for decades. I would say Mexico-Japan is a much bigger rivalry. Mexico, Philippines, those are bigger rivalries right now. Mexico, Puerto Rico is pretty one-sided this millennium. If we're being honest, this millennium, pretty one-sided. So I don't really call that a rivalry, but it will be marketed as such. So it wouldn't surprise me if you see Canelo fight Berlanga. Now, look, I'm not saying I like that. I'm not saying that's the way I want it. I'm saying that's the way it is. That's where we are at, okay? So if Canelo, and I have to mention this, and I've mentioned this several times before, David Benavidez and his management screwed him out of forcing the issue with Canelo when they lost that title, not once, but twice, okay? And it basically negotiated themselves out of any chance of kind of pushing Canelo into a corner and saying, you got to fight us. If Benavidez had that WBC belt when Canelo was going on his run at super middleweight, and he was going around saying, I want to be undisputed. I want to be undisputed, right? That was the marketing angle. The first Mexican undisputed champion at 168. That was the marketing angle that him and Eddie Hearn came up with when they did their whole business plan together. And it worked. But if Benavidez had that WBC belt and he refused to fight him, that would have been a really bad look, right? But now he doesn't have a belt. So now Canelo can just say, look, you don't even have a belt, dude. I don't need to fight you. You sell 20 pay-per-views when you fight. You know, you're a weight bully. You're really a cruiserweight that melts down to 168. You don't even have a belt. I don't need to fight you. I'm going to go fight Edgar Berlanga. And the sanctioning organizations will protect Canelo. And I'm not saying any of this to bash Canelo. I'm just telling you guys the way the business of boxing works. He's the top dog. That's the way it works. So all that being said, Canelo has shown in the past that he is willing to fight challenges. I mean, he fought Dimitri Bivol, and maybe he underrated him. I think he underestimated him clearly, but a lot of guys in Canelo's position would have never even taken that fight. Okay. And yes, he waited Golovkin out. He truly did. He still fought him twice when he was close to his prime. Right. So he fought guys like Arislandi Lara. He fought Floyd before he was anywhere near ready for that fight. So he has taken challenges in the past. So would it blow me away to see Canelo and Benavidez agree to terms to fight this September? Yeah, it wouldn't blow me away, but I would be surprised. Okay. I don't expect it to happen. I just don't. And by the way, Benavidez has a date coming up at 175 anyway. Who knows if he'll ever fight at super middleweight again. And quite frankly, if I'm being honest, and I've said this before too, and I'm going to leave on this note. At this point, I don't want to see. Let me be real clear and careful how I say this. I would like to see Canelo Benavidez, but you know what fight I'm more interested in? Benavidez against the Beter Biev Bivol winner. I'm more interested in that fight because Benavidez, where he's at in his career, his natural size, his natural strength, his style against those guys, to me, whether it's Beter Biev or Bivol, and now I'm starting to really lean toward Bivol because Beter Biev got hurt again, and he's going to stay, Bivol's going to stay active. But I just think stylistically that'd be a better fight and more relevant. Canelo's on his way out. Yes, he's the undisputed champion. I get all that. But unless you work yourself into a mandatory position, he can kind of fight whoever he wants. So I would rather see Benavidez against Bivol or Beter Biev. That's honestly what I'd rather see. Jose Maki said, Fury sold out Wembley at 94,000. WTF. Yeah, you're right. He did have a big crowd. You're right. Over in the UK, he did have a big crowd. That was after those Wilder fights. They gave away a lot of those tickets and they were discounted, but you're right. He did get people in there. So I'll take that back against Fury. I will say this. His pay-per-view numbers have been shit without Deontay Wilder. How about that? You can't dispute that. Pay-per-view numbers, absolute bombs here in America, unless he was fighting Wilder. So there. Ha ha. I got the last laugh. Just joking. Chiquiacho with a super chat. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. He adds, keep doing what you do, sir. I appreciate that. Thank you very, very much. Hamed says Benavidez versus Canelo is 50-50. I'm going to go 55-45 Canelo, but I'm with you on that. Okay. I'm still not 100% sold on Benavidez because he hasn't beat anybody, but he hasn't really had the opportunity to fight anybody yet. He beat a softened up Caleb Plant. So the jury's still out, but I agree with you. It's a very close fight. You could call it 50-50. Abso-freaking-lutely. Deed says, I see Vojdic beating Benavidez. I think if Vojdic was active and in the prime of his career, I would certainly agree with you. But at this point, I just don't know because it's just been so inactive. Jose Baki adds 60,000K versus Chisora 3. Yeah, look, so over in the UK recently, Fury has done large crowds. Here in the United States, outside of Deontay Wilder, he has not sold any pay-per-views and his crowds have been lackluster, okay? So anyway, I fully admit, though, at this point, Tyson Fury is a top 10, maybe even top 5 brand in the sport. He is. He absolutely is. All right, guys, that's it. I got to bounce. I got to put my little daughter down for her first nap of the day, all right? So have a good one, and we'll talk again soon. Enjoy the schedule. It's a buzzkill. June 1st, that's getting pushed back, but the rest of May is awesome, guys, so enjoy it.